Good morning. I'll open this presentation with a disclaimer. Some of you may recall that I joined Boofers Gordon and Tamara Hamilton on a Grand Canyon rafting trip 4 years ago, actually. We did it in the spring. And that we presented a service on that trip that particular summer. This year I'm going green. I'm reusing and recycling portions of that previous service. The Grand Canyon of the Colorado River in Arizona is 277 miles long. For the first 226 miles from Lee's Ferry to Diamond Creek, there is no road access. This is about the distance between Boise and Pocatello, or Boise and Pendleton. There are no motels, no television, no internet, and no cell phone service. A third of the way through, there is one small store at Phantom Ranch where one can enjoy a glass of ice-cold lemonade, buy a T-shirt, and use a flush toilet, perhaps while watching a scorpion crawl across the tiles. You may also make a phone call on the single working payphone. Anybody remember what payphones are? And you can mail postcards that will be hauled out of the canyon on mules. Nowhere else in the 226 miles is there a modern building, electricity, or water that comes out of a pipe. But there is beautiful scenery, secret gardens, and about 100 whitewater rapids that attract river runners from around the world. Some of these rapids can stand a loaded 18-foot raft on end. As such, usage is carefully regulated by the U.S. Park Service. Most people, perhaps 80%, who boat through the canyon are on commercial trips, where outfitters plan everything and do most of the work. However, many people, about 3,000 a year, float down on private trips. I was born and raised in Arizona, and as a teenager and younger man, about 60 pounds ago, I backpacked thousands of miles, including hundreds in the Grand Canyon. And I've been floating rivers for perhaps 30 years, including 3 previous Grand Canyon trips, all private. I had a permit in 1992, and with my girlfriend Kathy, joined me. When I flipped our 15-foot raft in a blinding downpour in the first major rapid, and Kathy bobbed up still smiling, I knew we were destined for greater adventures. In 2011, I led another trip through the canyon. In 2005, when I was able to request a launch date, I purposely chose one in June 2011 so that Megan and Linnea would be old enough to go. I wouldn't take anyone younger than 12 down, and anyone going, whether young or old, must be a good swimmer, comfortable with whitewater, and used to roughing it style camping. Our group was composed, basically, of 5 families from 5 states in 5 boats. We had 16 people. 2 were 12-year-olds. 2 were 15-year-olds. We had a 16-year-old, a 20-year-old, 9 middle-aged folk, and 1 senior. This time around, I plan to do the whole canyon right side up. Megan and Linnea can flip their own rafts when they get older. After all, there are only 2 types of whitewater enthusiasts, those who have flipped and those who are going to. My goal was to hopefully continue to nurture their love and knowledge of the water and the outdoors and to have fun with family and friends. The length, difficulty, and relative remoteness of the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon sets it apart from most other river trips. Due to the young age of many participants and the large amount of food, supplies, garbage, and waste we'd be carrying, We chose to rent 4 fully outfitted 18-foot rafts and 1 16-foot raft. We also paid the outfitter to purchase and pack the food, mostly chosen from a suggested menu they provided. I think choosing the menu is the biggest challenge of organizing the whole trip. Trying to accommodate carnivores, no red meat and vegetarian diets, a gluten-free diet, and picky eaters. At least that's what one mother thought her children would be. They proved to be more adventuresome than she expected. Keep in mind, if anything's forgotten or runs out, tough. There are no supermarkets in the Grand Canyon. So last summer, a few days after school was out, we drove down to Arizona. We met up with our companions at Marble Canyon Lodge the day before the launch and spent the day assisting the outfitters blowing up and rigging the boats and making our final preparations. There's a moment on a trip like this when you push your boats away from the shore at Lee's Ferry into the current of the river, that the entire weight of preparing for the trip floats off your shoulders, and you know none of it matters anymore. Whatever was happening at home, at employers, at school, or in the news is behind you, or so far ahead of you as to be inconsequential. When you commit yourself to the river, what happens in the rest of the world just doesn't matter anymore, at least for a while. And as A.A. Milne said in Winnie the Pooh, rivers know this. There is no hurry. We shall get there someday.
We didn't meet 10 of the 16 people in our group until the day before our launch. Others knew between 1 and 7 in the party before then. But for a couple of weeks, we were all dependent upon each other. Although each boat was prepared for the minor emergencies, no boat was 100% self-contained. We each carried communal gear, supplies, food, kitchen gear, propane, a water purification filter and pump, groovers or toilets, and toilet paper, a major first aid kit, and rescue gear. Unlike our community here at Booth, we wouldn't only be seeing each other on Sunday or for a couple of hours each week or two at committee meetings, classes, or chalice circles. For over 2 weeks, we would cook, eat, clean up, pack up, travel, unpack, play, and slumber together. Consequently, private time and quiet time at camp was very precious, except for some of the youngsters who had boundless amounts of energy. Their enthusiasm for play inspired the grown-ups to join in, especially in water fights on those always hot days. And why did our group of near strangers feel so free to do that? Well, for 16 days, these families and friends became a small tribe of nomads, and we truly learned to appreciate how much we need each other. And thankfully, we all got along. Now, our rafting trip in June of 2011 was not only an adventure, but also a personal milestone for me. As Lyndon mentioned, in 1992, he and I rafted the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon together. It was my first raft trip on big water, as I had plenty of experience in boats, flat water and whitewater canoeing in Florida and Maine, and even a bit of sailing on the Chesapeake Bay off the coast of Maryland. However, nothing compared to the sheer size and, well, the grand scale of the Grand Canyon. Much of that very first trip, I was simply awestruck. I was new to rafting, new to the West. Lyndon's and my relationship was only a few months old. And besides Lyndon, I didn't know anyone else on that trip. That trip was my introduction to all of those things, and in my mind, marked a new phase of my life. It's one I've crafted over the past 20 years as a woman, a wife, a mother, and active member of this fellowship. So the chance, 19 years later, to revisit that site of that transformational time in my life was the stuff dreams are made of. Now, Lyndon and I, individually and together, have many experiences in the outdoors. Wilderness camping, cross-country skiing, biking, and rafting brought us together. And as we looked forward to sharing our future, we knew any children we welcomed into our home would be steeped in it as well. So when first Megan, and then 3 years later, Linnea joined our family, we camped, rafted, biked, and swam, spending as much time outdoors as we possibly could, from a very young age for the girls. Megan was just over a month old on her first camping trip in the Sierra Mountains, and both girls have been rafting on whitewater every year since the age of two. Now, as an aside, we, our family, are ever so grateful to our family and friends who did these outdoor adventures with us without complaint. Sometimes in those early years, our daughters were the only children on the trip, and our trip mates played all manner of games and told those round the campfire stories to entertain them. And to them, we say, thank you. So when we learned 6 years ago that a Grand Canyon trip was a real possibility, it gave us that goal to work for. We made a concerted effort to get ourselves ready. Swimming lessons, being part of longer and more challenging river trips, and using our precious summer vacations to explore the wilderness in Wyoming, in Yellowstone, in Montana at Glacier National Park, and in southern Arizona around Lyndon's hometown of Tucson and the mountains of Idaho. As the girls grew older, we could take part in choosing where we went, and they could tell us what they wanted to do. Every vacation, no matter how long it was, became its own adventure. We would all chip in and take part in camp life, putting up tents, putting up our camp tent trailer, making meals, doing cleanup. And all this over the years contributed to our memory bank of family adventures that culminated in our Grand Canyon trip, a milestone for me, and I believe, in a way, a milestone for our family. The daily routine of life on the river contains many of the very elements we'd already mastered. We unpacked equipment from the boats, set up camp, cooked meals, did cleanup, packed it all up again the next morning, and repeated that same process 16 days in a row. Everyone had an assigned job, and we rotated through a different one every day, kids included. Now, Lyndon and I were, and we just continue to be, so proud of how well our daughters did and how hard they worked to make our trip a success. And they had fun to boot. I remember being asked over the years, how can you take kids rafting? And it's a very fair question, especially for an activity that involves a certain degree of risk and danger. And I thought about those years of preparation and family enjoyment we had experienced, and I just laughed and I said, how could we not take our children rafting, especially down the Grand Canyon? And therein lies some magic. As parents, Lyndon and I spend time with our daughters, exploring the outdoors together, doing things, not just reading about them or talking about them. So if I could give Megan and Linnea one thing to carry with them throughout their lives, it would be a boatload of diverse experiences to remember and to draw upon as they make their way in the world. I think the Grand Canyon trip was one such experience.
One of my favorite memories from our Grand Canyon trip is of our only layover day, where we spent two nights in the same camp. Much of the group had gone on a long hike, but my friend Amy, the other 12-year-old, and my dad and I were back at camp. Amy and I had a severe interest in the lizards that frequented rocks around camp, but catching them with our bare hands never seemed to work. My dad decided to teach us how to make little nooses attached to the ends of sticks so we could loop the nooses over the heads of the unsuspecting lizards and capture them. I had caught a little one, and Amy was off somewhere when I heard her yell, "Hey, I caught a big one!" Then, a few seconds later, she screamed, "Ow! It bit me!" My dad and I went over to see that she had dropped the lizard and stepped on the noose to keep it from escaping. I wasn't going near the thing. It was ginormous, about this big. So Dad tried to pick it up, which ended up with it hanging off his finger. Amy and I left to go play with our now, in comparison, even smaller lizards, leaving Dad with his lizardzilla. When we came back 10 minutes later, he was just sitting there stroking the beast, like it was a docile little lamb.
So I'd like to reassure you that a properly made lizard noose does not strangle the lizard. On hiking trips in Arizona, we often caught lizards and used Peterson's Guide to Reptiles and Amphibians to identify them. A lizard noose is made so it can't over-tighten. As you can see from this lizard noose, I fashioned for perhaps catching Komodo dragons. As you've probably realized, a Grand Canyon trip is not all about whitewater. There are some great and powerful rapids, but there just aren't enough for 16 days, if that's all you're looking for. The canyon is a spectacularly beautiful place. Sculpted rocks of all colors, grottos and waterfalls, clear or turquoise streams, the green or red or brown river, greenery and flowers abound. And occasionally you see some desert wildlife, bighorn sheep, California condors, mule deer, and smaller critters. But the canyon isn't all that welcoming. High temperatures in the inner canyon average over 100 degrees every day in June, July, and August. Kind of like Boise right now. And they can exceed 110 degrees. It sometimes seems like most life has weapons that they're ready to deploy. The red ants, the pink rattlesnakes, yellow scorpions, cactus, cat claw, and poison ivy. Other critters, including ravens, mice, and ring-tailed cats, a relative of raccoons, are bent on stealing your food. But having stingers, fangs, thorns, and poisons, or being a thief, doesn't necessarily mean dangerous. Left alone and approached with caution, the creatures and plants are generally not threatening and are fascinating to watch. In fact, the most dangerous elements in the canyon are not alive, in the organic sense. It's the rocks that will draw blood and take your skin. The sun will try to broil you. And the river, because of the Glen Canyon Dam upstream, is very cold, and even on the hottest day can cause hypothermia. In the course of our journey, we saw an assortment of other groups, both private and commercial. We even contemplated sharing some choice campsites with some. But we didn't regret bypassing those options, especially after being exposed to the lipstick, mascara, and sunburn-clad bikini hikers at Deer Creek. Hordes of folks who visited Elves Chasm. Or the lost family from Erie, Pennsylvania, who day hiked to the river from a backpacker's campground without appropriate shoes, with insufficient food and water, and no map. We gave them water, food, and one of our maps. Also, there was the Harris family, who, going solo, launched the same day we did. We often saw and heard them, including when the patriarch yelled loudly at his teenage sons, If you don't do what I say right now, I'm going to drive this boat straight through the hole in Lava Falls. That's one of the aspects of a trip like this. It's virtually impossible for people to maintain a facade for the duration of the trip. Individuals do not see themselves in a mirror, but everyone else sees them. People's true natures emerge, both good and bad. You get to know yourself and the people around you in a very unique way. Mark Twain in The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn wrote, "It's lovely to live on a raft. We had the sky up there all speckled with stars, and we used to lay on our backs and look up at them and discuss about whether they was made or only just happened. The long days of summer and fatigue from long days on the river meant we didn't gaze too long at the skies at night, but we did stare in awe at starlight that was a few years old to millions of years old. We identified constellations viewed and named by ancient Greeks and planets named for Roman gods. We watched man-made satellites suspended in orbit a few miles up traverse the sky, sometimes brighter than the brightest star, and sometimes barely visible. And we enjoyed seeing the fleeting and sometimes spectacular shooting stars, that is, meteors. In the daytime, as we drifted along calm stretches of the river, we looked up and marveled at the history exposed in the Grand Canyon. Henry David Thoreau said, the finest workers in stone are not copper or steel tools, but the gentle touches of air and water working at their leisure with a liberal allowance of time. Nowhere is this more apparent than in the dark depths of the Grand Canyon, looking up at the rims a mile above. The canyon was formed during the past 17 million years when earth movements and water cut gashes through 2 billion years of geology. That's how old the rocks are in the inner gorge, 2 billion years. Some of the youngest rocks on the journey occur at the put-in, where the sandstone is roughly 200 million years. But the youngest rocks are geologic toddlers. 500,000 years old lava flows in the lower canyon, including the one that created the biggest rapid in the canyon, Lava Falls. Geologic history is written in canyon walls, with fossils documenting brief moments in the history of life. On a more recent time scale, we stopped at Native American sites from a millennia ago, granaries to store corn, built high up the canyon walls, pictures chipped in the rocks, areas littered with broken pottery, and remains of stone buildings abandoned 600 years ago. We viewed the remains left by John Wesley Powell and other early European American explorers, miners, and adventurers of the past 150 years. Each of these provided a diversion and often a "Where's Waldo?" type search. For there are no signs guiding you to these artifacts. Often you feel as if you are the first to discover some of the hidden secrets of the canyon, both the man-made ones and the natural ones of rock, water, light, plants, and animals. And one sometimes feels a spiritual kinship to these forebears and people and places of long ago. And of course, there is the river. The miles of calm, serene floating, punctuated by anxious scouting of the more difficult rapids, followed by the thrill of running whitewater. Finally, the end of the trip approached. Diamond Peak, near the takeout, was in view our final night on the river. Approaching the end was bittersweet. We'd had a marvelous journey, everybody got along, and only three people swam unintentionally when the boat flipped in Hermit Rapid. On the same wave, actually, that flipped a boat I was riding in 20 years ago. Although our group had some injuries, none were terribly serious. The Diamond Creek takeout exposed us to the mad rush of civilization again. We had to unload the rafts, clear the beach, deflate the rafts as quickly as possible, and make room for the next boaters to take out. Then we had to load everything on a truck and in a van and head back to civilization. On the road, we covered distances in an hour that we would have taken us a whole day of floating to achieve. Although, when the van broke down, it would have given the rafts a chance to catch up. In Peach Springs, we again enjoyed the luxury of using flush toilets. We were amazed at how dirty the water got when we washed our hands, arms, and faces in a sink with copious amounts of soap and unlimited clean water. But we felt fine and a bit different than we had 2.5 weeks earlier. We felt relaxed, content, and at peace. Thank you.